All right, we are here. It's the Temple of Swan. Mike Temple, Alex Swan. We got a good show for y'all today. Dubs, Sharks, A's, Giants, NorCal versus SoCal in the battle of the playoffs. It's going to be a dandy. We're looking forward to it. Temple of Swan on radio.dominican.edu. Zombie Nation.
And this is the Temple of Swan. We want to thank our listeners for tuning in here on Thursday, 5 to 7 at our normal slot. And the semester's winding down a little bit. Just wanted to talk about that before we get into our sports talk, Alex.
Yeah, I'm down.
Are you ready for summer?
Yeah, I'm definitely ready for summer. Are you?
I think that's a rhetorical question, man. It should be assumed. I am definitely ready.
Yeah, I hear you. There's some students, though, that I think senior-wise, they might be a little sad to leave Dominican. Others are ready to hop out. Shout out to Big J. He's ready to hop out.
Shout out to Big J. Oh, man. That was a good little shout out. We talk better about sports. Let's get into some sports. So, yeah, as you said, it is NorCal versus SoCal. That's been the theme here in the Bay Area over the last week and now going to continue on for a couple more weeks because of playoffs. First, we had the A's and Giants taking off against their L.A. rivals in the Dodgers and Angels. Both teams took 2 out of 3. What were your feelings coming out of both of those series?
I felt like, first, both teams nearly swept. I think A's could have swept more than the Giants had a good chance to, but 2 out of 3 going on the road for the A's, especially good. Outstanding road trip. G-men took care of business at home against the Dodgers. Couple one-run ball games. That was tight. You were there last night in attendance. Overall, A's working the comeback. I thought they were able to definitely bail out Straley, and their bats started coming alive, clutch hitting. Giants on the other side, clutch pitching.
Yeah.
And bullpen-wise, I thought that those were the main points I took away.
Yeah, you can see the Giants' offense now starting to get into what it's probably going to look like for the rest of the season. Because in the beginning of the year, they were having those games where they'd score 8 or 9 runs and really bail out their pitchers. But now it's starting to be the pitchers. Vogelsong, Lincecum both had very good starts. And Bumgarner today didn't pitch bad. He got through 5. Only gave up 2, which is not a bad start at all. His pitch count just kind of crept up on him. But that's what you're going to see from the Giants, is they're going to have to win games by pitching and then get some timely hits, which they didn't get today, but they overall did in the series, as they won the series 2-1. And then switching over to the A's, really they're struggling with their bullpen, which we didn't expect coming in. They can't find a guy to close it out. Gregerson lost it last night, lost the save.
And I was surprised.
Yeah, they're really giving up games late. Like, they were up 4-1 and they gave it up. I mean, just things are happening for the A's that aren't really characteristic of the organization the past 2 years. But they're still winning. They took the series 2-1 like the Giants did. So overall, a very good trip. You only lose 2 games on a 9-game road trip. That's a successful trip.
Always. And I think A's, compared to the rest of the division, their bullpen is by far better than the rest. Texas is kind of weak. Angels might have the worst bullpen in that division.
Yeah, and we saw that in this series. Their bullpen is just atrocious.
Yeah, and eventually, if Texas doesn't start getting on their horse, the A's are going to start separating with more games as the season prolongs, and that's going to be a nice comfort level for them as their season continues to grow. But I liked what I saw, especially on the road trip. I don't think the Angels really are at any pace with the Athletics so far.
Yeah, especially with Hamilton going down. Their pitching staff isn't up to par. They have Weaver and Wilson, really. Those are their two main guys, but the back half of the rotation, number 3, 4, 5 guys, are not where they need to be for them to compete in the AL West against teams like the Mariners, the Rangers, or the A's, I almost said the Angels. But yeah, I mean, the A's, if they can get consistent starting pitching throughout the whole season, they should be atop the whole year. Right now, they have a nice little buffer in the AL West, only 15 games through the beginning of the season, but they're playing well early on.
If they had Parker, I'd pick them right now to win the division. That is probably a premature pick, but if they did, I'd say this team is by far probably the best team in the AL West.
Yeah.
I'm not seeing much from Texas right now. They got a long, long ways to get it together.
Yeah, and they're dealing with injuries too as well. So both the A's and Rangers have had their fair share of injuries in the early half of the season. With the A's, the one thing I'm concerned about is, can these pitchers who are so young and haven't really logged a lot of innings in the majors, continue the success throughout a 162-game season. We've seen Jesse Chavez, a former reliever, long guy. He's dealt in the first three starts, but can he keep that going throughout a starting every five other days, if you know what I'm saying there?
That's huge. You can't afford them to run out of gas. It will help once Griffin comes back, but that's a great point. We don't know if they can, and maybe you'll see Melvin, I don't know,
I mean, he might have, with the rotation. Once A.J. Griffin comes back, then you have the luxury of maybe skipping a start if you want to sit Jesse Chavez down for one start and give him some extra rest. You can bring A.J. Griffin in, and then Tommy Malone's been pitching pretty well out of the five spot in his first two starts. I liked what I've seen. He pitched very good yesterday. So, I mean, they've got six capable arms down there. It's just a matter of everyone staying consistent throughout the season.
I agree, and they can't afford one more arm to go down. If these guys can stay relatively healthy, then I think they'll be okay, stamina-wise, coming down the stretch.
Yeah.
At least hopefully.
And then you're going to have to get your hitting to come around as well. The A's have been struggling with runners on, as the Giants have too. But
both
the
teams.
Yeah, the Giants have been getting those clutch hits when they really need them to win those 2-1 games or those 3-2 games. The A's are leaving way too many people on base with guys like Reddick coming up, not getting productive outs. Donaldson's even left some guys on base. Cespedes has struggled. And then you have Derek Barton, who I don't know why is still playing. I mean, just things that are happening for the A's where they're not knocking in those runs when they need to.
Is Barton under 100?
I'd have to check that real quick. But I know I was hovering, because him and Reddick are definitely hovering around that 100 mark.
That was just a random fact. One thing I want to talk about, this had happened a couple days ago. It was a debate we were talking about last week's show, was who would the A's send down? And they ended up sending down Fold. And I know you weren't too happy about that, because Reddick has one more option and he really hasn't found his swing yet, and it doesn't look like he's breaking out too soon. As we get Derek Barton stats, he's 77.
He's batting
077.
That's not a 700 batting average.
My goodness.
No, he's hitting 077. He's got two hits and 26 at-bats, and yet he's still playing.
That's tough.
And they didn't send him down.
So what do you think of the move?
I mean, I don't like it at all, because you know once, because the A's had a week before Fold can actually hit the waivers and people can claim him, you know he's going to be gone. So why would you risk sending a guy who's contributed? Yeah, he was only batting, I think, 230, but he was making a better impact than Reddick or Barton combined. He was making defensive plays like Reddick does, and he was getting way more hits than Barton and Reddick were. So why wouldn't you send Fold down and keep him on your roster, because you know he has no more options left, but you have a guy like Reddick who you could send down to your River Cats, get some time in AAA system and start batting a little bit better with more consistency, or you can send down Barton, who never gets claimed off waivers. He's gone down four times without being claimed off waivers, so I'd feel pretty safe sending him down a fifth time.
Yeah, me too. But we'll talk about the bright spot. What do you think about Gentry?
Gentry's a good player. He almost caught that ball last night to rob Iannetta of the game-winning homer. That was one thing I noticed from Gentry. But the way he hustles, he's a very good substitute for Coco Crisp, especially with Crisp battling some injuries right now early in the season. Crisp was a key pickup, and I'm glad that he was the guy coming off the DL and taking
the dole.
Yeah, and taking Fold spot, because Gentry's a very good player, very good fourth outfielder who's going to get some consistent playing time, and he's got speed. That's what I like about Gentry. He knows how to steal a bag, and you're not losing much when you take out Coco Crisp and Sub and Gentry.
You can go gap to gap pretty well, and right when Iannetta hit that ball, I thought when Gentry settled at the wall, you knew he was going to have a chance, and he almost brought that back. That would have been a great impression of Mike Trout in his own home. I would have been happy to see that. But now they take on the Strohs, and the A's dominated the Strohs last year.
Yeah, they got fat off the Strohs.
And
they must have played them 18 times, 19 times, and beat them 36 times. You know, that was the way it seemed. It just
so that's a recipe again, right?
Yeah.
Take care of business against the Strohs.
Because the Astros started hot in that first series, if you want to count that as a small sample size. But the Astros are showing themselves now of late. You've got to take care of business against these kind of teams, especially at home. They didn't have a good home stand the first time with the Mariners and Indians because of all the rain or whatever. They didn't get normal batting practice. Now you're in your routine. You've got to start taking care of these teams that you should beat. And I think anything less than a sweep is really a failed series.
Yeah.
Because you're going to have, for the Astros series, we all know their struggles batting. I think they're batting like 180 as a team. You're going to have Sonny Gray, Scott Kazmir, Jesse Chavez as the three pitchers to start those games. You should have.
That makes sense. You need to
exactly.
Sweep.
You should have a favorable matchup in all three of those.
And I think they can get it done. G-Men will take on the Padres. I'm not sure if they can go and get a sweep.
I mean, I think they could.
They could potentially.
They're playing pretty well right now. 10-6 are the Giants.
Yeah.
Very good record early on. And they're going to have Huddy going, who I think has just been a gem this season so far.
He's been huge.
In his first couple of starts. And then they're going against Tyson Ross in game one. Of course, they're a Bay Area native, went to O'Dowd, pitched for the A's for a little bit. I think they handle him in game one. And then from the rest, I mean, they like hitting in Petco Park. It's a little bit more spacious. Give Blanco, Pagan, maybe some double, triple opportunities if they can find a gap. And I mean, I think it's the same with the A's. I think they've got to go in there looking for a sweep.
Double sweep, that'd be nice, especially for the Bay. Two things a little bit off topic I want to talk about. One for the Padres, and then I want to get into Yasiel Puig today. But did you see that giant contract Jed Yorko signed?
Yeah, with the I don't know why they signed him to that monster deal.
Is he that good?
I mean, I know of the guy, which means he's at least decent, but I've never heard him like filling up
stat
sheets.
That's a lot of money.
Sheets.
What was that, 5-6 year deal?
Yeah, and they're guaranteeing him definitely a lot of money.
And so I was wondering, I don't know how old Yorko is, but I was surprised when I saw that deal. Breaking news on SportsCenter, and so that was one thought that came to mind. And the second one, as we get the deal here, 6 year, $35 million. Okay. So they're locking up Yorko.
They've got him for 6 years.
I guess they like what he's...
That's a nice little contract for a second baseman.
Oh, yeah. And now Puig. So throughout the series, there's been a little hack on Puig. He got benched yesterday for... In the previous game, the very first game of the series, he hit a deep fly ball to right, and he took about 4 steps out of the batter's box and hit the dugout. And you know, it's kind of sportsmanship. And all your teammates and managers watch this. If you finish and run to first base,
yeah,
all hitters do it. Puig, not so much. And today, he's back in the lineup. Routine fly ball.
Routine.
And Puig just got kind of that nonchalant characteristic in the outfield, how he plays, kind of happy-go-lucky. Well, he thought he could just pop his glove out, you know, take it one-handed,
basket
not really
catch
protect.
It.
Yeah, basket catch it. It was a lazy fly ball to him, and he dropped it. Luckily for him, though, he was able to throw out the runner at second because no big leaguer is going to expect a right fielder to just drop a lazy fly ball. So there's Puig's blunder. He gets out of it, though. He's got a cannon. And then Temple walks in with some T-Bell smelling delicious. and we see Puig make this. How are you going to describe it?
It was definitely over the shoulder.
It
had to take
like
a couple steps to the left.
Yeah.
And he was like bent a little bit. I don't even know how to explain it, but it was such a nice grab.
You know, running down the sideline in football and someone puts a fade and you got to go get it, and then it bends all the way over to your left shoulder. You got to like contort your body.
Yeah.
You can't really see it. You just stick your two hands out.
There you go.
And make the catch. Puig did that with a baseball glove. Made the catch.
Some receiver's gloves. Some stick-em was in
there.
He
just barehanded it. And so, I don't know.
And that was the next play.
Yeah, that was the very next play. And so, Puig is just an interesting guy. And you had a good article you just pulled up here.
Yeah, because this is the new news on Yasiel Puig. He's receiving death threats from smugglers about his leaving Cuba. I haven't really gotten to delve too much into it, but a lot of people are making serious news of this, that he's getting death threats towards him and his family for leaving Cuba in the fashion that he did and saying he's not paying them enough money for his leaving Cuba. I mean, it's just really interesting. Yasiel Puig is always in the news. And like you said, you're talking about the fly ball at first when he hit the coolest ever pop out to right field. I mean, that ball might have gotten down the line. There was definitely a chance that it could have hit off the wall. But he was like pimped it and tried to strut down the baseline like he just hit a homer.
Yeah. And then he just yelled, no, and hit the dugout.
I know. It didn't even start to jog.
So the bat in his hand.
He didn't do a speed walk. He was just one step every 25 seconds, it seemed, in trying to make it look as cool as possible.
Yeah.
And that's Yasiel Puig for you. But yeah, he made it here. Next play, makes a web gem.
So I want to know.
You can never predict what he's going to do.
What do you think it is in the locker room for the Dodgers, for Mattingly, the manager, and the players, as you keep seeing this?
Yeah, I don't think there's much what's the word? Chemistry. I was trying to think of a different word, but there's not much chemistry going on. Yeah. I don't think in the Los Angeles Dodger.
He's kind of just doing whatever he wants.
Because you have, you have Puig, who is definitely an outlier. He'd be an outlier in any dugout. Then you have guys like Adrian Gonzalez, Hanley Ramirez. There's such weird characters in that dugout, to where in that clubhouse, to where you think, how do these guys get along? You're definitely not going to see them joking around with each other. I don't think they're too high of stars, if that makes sense. There's too many stars coming together, exactly. And then you have Puig. I don't think anyone gets along with Puig. They've already had two meetings with him, with coaches and players only.
Especially with the crowded outfield. Yeah. Everybody wants to play.
They got Kemp, Ethier. There's so many people in that outfield that you have to find only three spots for in the NL because you don't have that DH. Yeah. I don't think they get along at all, but they're playing well enough right now to where it doesn't matter, and winning solves all. So as long as they keep winning, I don't think you'll ever hear about it.
And they will. They'll keep winning, but this is what I want to know. I feel like you see this with nearly every team that wins a ship, whether it be in football, basketball, or baseball, hockey. The chemistry from a team is huge.
Yeah.
And the Dodgers don't show that at all. Can they win a World Series with what they have, despite all the incredible names they have on the roster?
Yeah, and chemistry is underrated, like you said, in any sport. We saw it with the Red Sox last year. They seemed like a very tight-knit group, and we see it all the time with the Seattle Seahawks. Everyone was against them.
Absolutely.
They banded together. I mean, every year you'll see a championship team come about that really has great chemistry, and it's those teams that you say always pay the big money. They don't win. That's probably why they don't win, because they pay so much money. Guys are divided in the locker room. They're not as close together. They're all about me, not the team. And that's why they don't win championships. Money can't buy championships. And I think chemistry is a big part of why teams win those final games.
Couldn't have said it better. I agree wholeheartedly.
And, that was the start of the NorCal versus SoCal showdowns. And NorCal is definitely up right now 4-2. So a good advantage. And then we're going to move to the playoffs, which probably bigger impact. Well, does have a bigger impact. We have the Clippers going against the Warriors, kicking off Saturday at 12:30 at ABC. Probably... Well, I'm kind of biased saying this, but in my mind, the greatest series in the first round is the Clippers versus Warriors.
Hands down.
Okay, East you agree. And West. You're a Kings fan, so I don't think there's too much bias in this.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, hands down. What we've seen from the regular season, hands down, this is the best first round playoff series, opening round. And it hurts that there's no Bogut, but something tells me that this will still be a series where it can touch seven. It might not, but I think it gets to six.
Yeah, and all the analysts on ESPN or in Sports Illustrated, whatever you take this for, I mean, it doesn't really mean much every year. We find that out. But everyone's picking the Clippers in either five or six because of the fact that there's no Bogut. But I think even without Bogut, this is still going to be a very intriguing series between two teams that don't like each other. So I expect nothing less than 6 to 7 games, no matter who the victor is.
Yeah, and this is a huge point. I want to know how the Clippers finish close games in the playoffs, because DeAndre Jordan can't shoot a free throw at all.
Yeah, and Blake Griffin's getting a little better, but he has his struggles, especially in such an atmosphere like the playoffs.
It's a huge stage. So you take out DeAndre Jordan late. It will probably happen quite a bit. That makes the Clippers go small. And that Warriors are going to be going small already.
They have no other choice.
So there's a lot of people overlooking the Dubs with no Bogut. Without Bogut, it hurts. But if we see a Harrison Barnes from last season in the playoffs, I don't know. There's bound to be one of the Warriors that no one's picking to step up that's going to step up.
Yeah, I agree. And you're going to need everyone from the Warriors deep. Not deep. We're going to need everyone. They're like 6 or 7 deep now, so I can't even say deep. But everyone from the bench, the last guy on the bench to the starting lineup, Stephen Curry, they're going to need to step up and have the series of their life to win this series. They're definitely up against the Clippers, who are a very good team, very capable of sweeping them. But when you look at it, you can say Stephen Curry will win you two games by himself just taking over.
And he could.
You're hoping that happens. If Curry shoots the ball well and is facilitating like he was towards the end of the season, Curry can win you two games. Then you're hoping Thompson shoots the ball well, and he can maybe carry two games for you. So you're trying to win that way and have huge games from your splash brothers or superstars, because your team isn't deep anymore. You're without Bogut. You're running small ball. You're going to rely on Draymond Green to guard DeAndre Jordan or Blake Griffin. That's definitely a mismatch. So you're going to have your shooters shooting the ball extremely well to have a chance in the 7-game series.
I think that's the huge key. Can Curry possibly outplay Chris Paul? the backcourt certainly is better than the Clippers' backcourt. Dubs are going to get out-rebounded, but there's going to be other ways that you can beat the Clips. If transition becomes a huge part, because the Clips love to get up and down too, I think that plays in the Warriors' hands.
Yeah.
If they want to get up and down, and it probably will. Also, free throws. If the Clips start clanking, that's big for the Dubs.
Yeah, because they're going to get to the line a lot. The Clippers are going to get their free throws.
Yeah.
And they're going to get their attempts. It's going to be huge to see if Jordan shoots 50% throughout the series and Griffin shoots maybe 60, you'll take those numbers.
Absolutely.
They're going to get to the line maybe 8 to 10 times a game at the low side. So if they're making 50% of their free throw shots, that's left out points for the Warriors to come down and maybe knock down some threes and really change the tide of a game.
And then, yeah, maybe you see the I don't want to start comparing this to college ball, but try to beat them from beyond the arc. Just start firing away.
That's my strategy, at least.
Really put the pressure on them. If they catch fire from three, that just points that
and,
keeps piling up.
That's
why
we see so many upsets in college basketball, because teams will rely on that three. And if they got it going, there's nothing you can do to stop it.
You can
get a hand in Curry's face, but if he's knocking down threes and he's in human torch mode, he's going to knock them down no matter what.
That's a great
analogy. So, I mean, that's got to be the Warriors' approach, because they're definitely outsized in this matchup. They're outcoached in this matchup. Their bench isn't that good at all compared to the Clippers' bench, which is really good in scoring with Crawford
and
Redick.
That's
going
to be a big key to bench play.
So they're outmatched in almost every facet of the game that you look at. The one equalizer is their three-point shooting and their versatility going small. If Draymond Green's shooting good, if HB's shooting good, I mean, a lot of things have got to be going good. But if they're all shooting good and playing well and playing hard on defense, this is a series that could go 6 or 7 games.
Absolutely. And if Curry goes human torch mode and Thompson starts really catching fire, that floor just opens up like crazy. And then you start seeing, even though they're undersized, Curry, Barnes, Thompson all starting to be able to get into the lane, Draymond get into the lane, just because they can fire from outside. And the Clips, if they don't go small, they're going to be exposed. Yes, they got great big men down low on the offensive side, but the Warriors aren't going to be going inside much.
Yeah,
might see Lee in there, but
they're not going to be running that D-Lee ISO
every
time down because of the size disadvantage.
And so that forces Griffin and Jordan to play on the perimeter. That's a huge mismatch, I think, defensively for them.
Yeah, and the more you can make Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan move on the defensive side, the better impact you're going to have when they're coming down the other end, because they're going to be tired. They're not going to want to work in those post moves against Draymond, who definitely gives up a fight on the lower post. So if you're making them work on the defensive side, then they're going to have less input on the offensive side.
Yeah.
And I think that's got to be a strategy for the Warriors, is make them run around on the perimeter, like you're saying. You're going to want to stretch DeAndre Jordan to the three-point line and make him foul you or move his feet to deny you from getting to the hoop.
I think he's the biggest kind of X-factor / weakness. DeAndre Jordan could really hurt the Clips in this series. Despite how athletic and how dominant he is at protecting the rim, he might be that Achilles heel for them. I think the Warriors could really take advantage. But I think what is huge, steal one on the road somehow. Steal one.
Yeah,
and
they
that
did
just
it.
Wakes
yeah,
up
exactly.
Everybody.
They did it last year in the playoffs. You've got to win one game on the road. And if it's game one, even better. But if you can take game two on the road, come back home, then anything can happen. The series knotted up, and you're
anything.
Coming down to Oracle, which should have a huge impact. I think different from the regular season, the playoffs are a different animal, and I think Oracle has that kind of advantage in the playoffs.
They are that.
So
beast that
like
awakes.
Like you said, if they take one in Staples and then come back, anything could happen. You could make this game interesting, and then you take two at home, you're up 3-1. Then
if they do
just
that,
finish off one.
That's
very wishful
that's
thinking.
That's the ideal situation.
Yeah, that's wishful thinking, but it could happen, I guess. If I'm not too confident. What's your prediction in this series?
This is how I
give it to me straight. Give it to me straight.
When everybody starts riding one team, that one team seems to slip up. And I could be totally off, but I'm going to say Clips look out of sorts in Doc's first go-around. Dubs and six.
You're saying Dubs and six? Okay.
Dubs
I was gonna
and
go,
six.
I was going to go Clips and six because I'm not too...
I understand, and my prediction could look
exactly.
Completely boneheaded.
So could mine. This all could change on the fact with Klay Thompson's hitting his jumpers. If Curry's hitting his jumpers, then anything could happen. This game could be over in five. I mean, this series could be over in five. And like you said, it's Doc Rivers' first playoff appearance with the Clippers. It's a new team. I don't know how they respond in the clutch.
Yeah, and I want to know, does Iggy give Chris Paul problems?
I think they're going to have to rotate on Chris Paul with their perimeter guys. Maybe give Stephen Curry like one possession against him maybe every quarter, but he's not going to get to see too many minutes against Chris Paul because he can't stick with him. But I think we're going to see Klay Thompson on him for a majority of the game, and then they're going to switch and go with Iguodala because those two guys are pretty equal defenders. Klay Thompson doesn't get enough credit for his defense, but he's a very good guard, and he can stick with those explosive point guards. So I could see them doing a little bit of switch, one possession going with Iggy, the other one going with Klay Thompson, then just keep rotating back and forth to keep your legs fresh on the offensive side. I could see that happening.
Yeah. It's going to be an intriguing series, but I just wonder. I haven't heard one analyst or spectator pick the Warriors.
I haven't either.
When that kind of stuff goes down, the underdog loves that. Dubs are the underdog, and yes, they're banged up. They don't have their center. And Lee's trying to get back. Iggy's trying to get back. But if there's any type of fight that they showed last year in the playoffs against the Nuggets and Spurs, I think Clips better watch out.
Yeah, you're hoping that maybe this team is just really driven towards the playoffs, and that's where their real kind of athletic prowess will show. Because HB last year, he didn't have a good year last year either, but in the playoffs he becomes some kind of animal.
It seems
and
like,
he really just
yeah.
took off. And then last game with no Curry, Iguodala, or Lee, they're all sitting due to resting injuries. They didn't have to win it, so why play them? Harrison Barnes beasted, scored 30, dunked over a Nugget player. I mean, it's just crazy how maybe he could step up and fill that role of a scorer maybe in the playoffs. This could be a good time for him to get hot.
It is, and you give a lot of coaches credit, and Doc Rivers is as good as it gets, but this team is virtually the same, except for Big Baby and Granger. I think those two guys really help out the bench, but we'll see. Warriors are going to run less players. Chances are they can get in a rhythm faster than the whole two units for the Clippers. If DeAndre Jordan can't cut it, Matt Barnes all of a sudden becomes a stretch four. I'd take that any day.
Yeah, and I don't think the Warriors would mind Matt Barnes being a stretch four, because then you're getting the size off the floor. And you're really playing into the Warriors' hands, like you talked about, who are going small in this series. What's another series that you're looking forward to throughout the slate of the 2014 first round?
Definitely.
I think it's coming from the West, if I had any
yes.
premonition.
Honestly, I hate to do this, but I'm not really intrigued by any of the first round series in the East. There's going to be one. Maybe Nets-Bulls. Okay, I'll throw in Nets-Bulls is a little bit intriguing, but excuse me. Wizards, Bulls.
Yeah, I mean, the Wizards and Nets kind of switched me up, too. You got John Wall.
Yeah. Scratch all of that. I'm not intrigued by the East. Okay, Portland and Houston. Portland and Houston is a series that I'm interested in.
Yeah, I think that's also one to watch out for. You got Lillard going against Harden, and then Parsons for the Rockets. I think it's a huge X factor in this series. Both teams can get up and score the ball. It's going to be up and down series just like I expect the Warriors and Clippers to be. And you're talking about it. There's really no series in the East that can get me that we could talk about like this. But the West, I think all four series really provide intriguing matchups. You have Dallas going against the Spurs. Dallas is a very capable team.
If you're the Spurs, you better watch out. This isn't new territory where they've been upset by an 8 seed.
Exactly.
And I would not. I think the Spurs are a little upset that Memphis won last night.
Yeah,
and they're gonna have to play Dallas. That's always an intriguing series.
And of course, both from the same state, so you're gonna have a nice little interstate rivalry. Then you're going to that 2-7 matchup where it's the Thunder versus Grizzlies, and the Grizzlies have the size to give anyone problems in the playoffs. We'll see how that size matches up against really the small playing Thunder. Ibaka's gonna have to get up and move down the court. Durant's going to have to take over with Westbrook. I mean, that's going to be an interesting series as well.
That will be. The only reason OKC, I think, handles this is they're going rematch now. Now they have Westbrook. Memphis beat them last year without Westbrook in the playoffs, and I think that leaves a bitter taste in your mouth, especially if you can get a rematch next year in the playoffs. So, but, yeah, you got to be careful. That team can defend and rebound, and OKC barely got by the Pistons to end the year, so they definitely didn't end the season on the highest of notes.
But they did end up as a two seed.
They did.
And we're going to your most intriguing matchup, the Trailblazers versus the Rockets. I said Chandler Parsons is going to be the X factor. Who do you think sticks out as the biggest key ingredient for their team to win?
For the Rockets?
Or either team, whoever you think is going to win. I think the Rockets are going to win, but in seven, I think it's going to be Parsons going to have to play a huge role. Who do you think?
He will. I'm going to give you two. Wesley Matthews for the Blazers, I think, is going to have to be big. And I'm going to give you one more. Robin Lopez on Dwight Howard. That's going to be a huge. How can he handle him? And on the other side, I'm going to say Terrence Jones at the power forward. How does he match up with Aldridge? And does Dwight ever switch over to Aldridge if it's late?
And Aldridge is a beast. You know he's going to get his, just like Howard's going to get his rebounds, Aldridge's going to get his points and rebounds. This series is going to go back and forth, and those are very good X factors, and I think it plays into what's going to be probably the second most intriguing series like you're talking about.
Could one of these teams out of Houston and Portland, could they run the table?
I think anyone in the West could potentially run the table because the West is so deep. You get in with 50 wins. You have to win 50 games to get into the Western playoffs, as in the East, you only have to win, I think, what was it, 36 or something like that.
36.
But coming from the West, all these teams are proven winners this season, and if they get hot,
look out.
And they can definitely make that run. Whoever comes out of the West is going to be battle-tested and probably a little bit bruised to go against the Eastern Conference, but I think any one of these eight teams from the West can definitely run the table.
Yeah. And if we go back to your prediction and it comes out to be Clips in six, watch out for that team. I'm picking them to lose, but that team can...
If they get past the first round, then it's going to be a different animal for them, and I think they could definitely run the table because they definitely present some matchup problems for both the Thunder and the Spurs. I mean, it's hard to match up with the Clippers because they give you so much scoring off the bench. They have those two beasts down low in Jordan and Griffin, and then you have one of the best point guards probably of all time in Chris Paul.
Yeah.
It's hard to match up with the Clippers.
And I think that's a terrible matchup for the Spurs if they draw the Clippers next. That's a team that wants to run you in the Spurs don't want to do that.
They're methodical. They want to make sure 24 is taken off the shot clock every time before they get their best look.
And same with the Rockets. That's a dark horse team. Harden always seems to come up big in the playoffs.
Yeah.
So I can't wait. I cannot wait. What about you, partner? Are you stoked?
Wait, dude, I think all the games start Saturday, right?
Yes.
So, yeah. Coming this weekend, we're going to get some good basketball, baseball, hockey. Everything's coming to the forefront, and it's a great time to be a sports fan. We're going to take a break here at the Temple of Swan at radio.dominican.edu. When we be back, we'll be talking some Sharks hockey for the first time of the semester. Ooh. Thank you. We are back at the Temple of Swan at radio.dominican.edu, continuing our NorCal versus SoCal, or no, NorCal versus SoCal. I mean, it seems weird because it'd be like NorCal versus SoCal kind of thing, but yeah. That's what always throws me off. I just wanted to point that out. But NorCal versus SoCal kind of trend to this show. We're going to have the Sharks taking off tonight at the SAP Center against the hated LA Kings, also a rival. You're going to hear some Beat LA chants going on.
Oh, yeah.
In San Jose tonight, as it was in San Francisco throughout this three-game series. I know, I mean, we watch hockey here in and out. We'll watch it when the game's on. Don't pay attention to it like we do with football or baseball or basketball, but playoff hockey is a different beast.
Dude, that's a new animal.
And it's something to pay attention to. You want to go into your thoughts about some playoff hockey?
Basically, I think, from the regular season compared to playoff hockey, it's kind of like that tiger laying in the weeds. And once playoffs hit, the tiger has spotted the antelope.
This is,
and he's about to pounce. And that's what the crowd seems like. It is so loud. Announcers go bonkers, which I love, especially in playoff hockey. But I don't know. It's just a new beast. Intensity ratchets up like no other.
And there's going to be way more fights.
Yeah.
There's going to be less like, what's the word? There's going to be less care for penalties in playoff series.
They let them play.
Exactly. They're going to have your bruisers go and get it and purposely get penalties. You want to send a message to the other team early on. That's why playoff hockey is so much different than in other sports. Teams will purposely take penalties and send others to the box to send a message. And that's what I expect from the Sharks-Kings series. Two teams that know each other very well, play in the same division, same conference. They've seen each other a lot in the playoffs. They lost the last time. The Sharks lost the last time these two teams met in seven, with the home team winning in each game. Now the Sharks have home ice advantage. and they're looking to do the same to the Kings and eliminate them this year.
Big revenge. Another thing about playoff hockey is the road team can take any given game. That's a lot harder to do in basketball and a little bit in baseball. But there's road upsets all the time in hockey, but they're looking for the revenge. And I think it's about time the Sharks get out of the first round and make a deep run. And San Jose fans have been waiting for it.
Yeah, every year you think the Sharks are going to make that run, and it's always been claimed that they will finally make that run. And hopefully they're saying this year is the year, but we'll have to wait and see.
It's going to be tough.
Tonight they take off. And we'll get to that more. We have Devin Golston coming in here for an interview, so we'll be right back at Ping Radio, radio.dominican.edu. Same dancers in the same old shoes. You get too careful with the steps you choose. You don't care about winning, but you don't want to lose. After the thrill is gone. After the thrill is gone. After the thrill is gone. Boy. After the thrill is gone. Shaking my confidence daily. Oh, Cecilia, well, I'm down on my knees. Well, I'm begging you, please, to come on. Come on now. Cecilia, well, you're breaking my heart. You're shaking my confidence daily. Well, I'm down on my knees. Well, I'm begging you, please, to come on. Come on now. But you
and we're back at radio.dominican.edu on the Temple of Swan. We got senior forward Devin Golston with us. I'm going to shoot him a couple questions. You ready, Temp?
The real question is, Devin ready? I'm ready. Devin, how are you doing? I'm born ready. Oh, he's born ready. Man. So we have Devin, like you said, the senior. He was like a forward center for the team this year, who posted a 22-8 mark. What were your feelings overall in the season, Devin? Definitely the best in the Division II era for the Dominican team.
I was real pleased about how the season went, actually. Unfortunately, I came down with injury on February 5th, and it cut the season short. But overall, I feel the guys did a great job and handled themselves. Connor and Miles, they stepped up and played some big minutes and did some good things for the team, and they all played well in my absence.
When you were getting in to the very beginning of the season, were you expecting to make this kind of run?
Honestly, no.
Yeah?
No. I knew we had some things to work on. We're pretty young, but I did not see us going this far. But fortunately for us, we did, and we played well.
What came together, you think?
Chemistry. Everybody knew their roles and what they needed to do to contribute to the team, and it just worked out.
And you talked about that. You mentioned it briefly about that injury ending your season shortly. You're having probably your best season. I've only been here for 1 year, but you're definitely an impact player for the team, leading them in scoring and rebounding. What was it like when you got that injury? What were your first thoughts when you came down with that injury against Dixie State?
My first thought was, I hope it's not torn, broken, any of that. I didn't know what to expect, but I knew it was just excruciating pain immediately, and I just knew it wasn't good. But I was hoping that it wouldn't be too serious.
Because we talked to you. Initial news was it wasn't torn, right?
Yeah.
What went down in the doctors?
Well, I first went to Kaiser in San Rafael, here in San Rafael, and they told me that I had a sprained meniscus injury, and then he said about 2 to 3 weeks, and then I could be back. And then
probably juiced, right?
Yeah, definitely. I was like, okay, well, I guess I can miss out on the remaining of this season and then come back for the conference tournament and play. But unfortunately, that wasn't the case. I saw a school doctor here, and she told me to get an MRI, and unfortunately, the results came back, and it was torn.
What does that do in your head as a player? That just kill you?
Yeah, it killed me extremely. It wasn't fun. It was unfortunate, and I wasn't expecting it at all.
So now going in towards more happy feelings, you're starting your recovery, and you're trying to play ball overseas. What's it been like starting this recovery? Because I know physical therapy is probably one of the hardest things to do for anyone, even an athlete like you are. You have such great jumping ability. You're a very good stretch four. What's the recovery like right now in terms of physical therapy?
As far as the recovery goes, it's just been icing and trying to keep the swelling down as much as possible. Getting my leg to a full range of motion as it was once before, it's going to take some time, but if I do it the right way, yeah, I'll recover.
What's the plan? Say everything goes smoothly, you recover, and obviously I guess it will take some mentally to get over to coming back to the court. What's your plan trying to get to overseas?
Well, first and foremost, just rehab the right way. And like you said, it is going to be a mental thing for me. So if I could get over that hump, then I'll be back ready.
Yeah, I think that's the hardest thing for athletes coming back. Adrian Peterson touched on it. Derrick Rose touched on it. It's all about the mental. Because you know as an athlete, when you get back on the court, you'll be able to play. It's more of the mental block that really scares you. I never had an injury like that, so I can't give it from experience, but it's the apprehension to do things that you maybe not know how to do anymore or see if you can push that kind of limit. So it's definitely the hardest thing. You watched the season this year, 22-8, you played great. The team played great in your absence. Like you said, Haysburg, Carrillo, everyone stepped up when you went down in the conference tournament, lost in the finals. What are your feelings towards next year since they are losing guys like yourself, Haysburg, Carrillo? What's kind of the outlook for the next year's team? Because certain guys did show up and play well towards the end of the season.
Well, as far as this year's team and who's coming back for next year, I believe they all can play well. Like Dominique, Matt, Chris, Josh, both Joshes. To be honest, that if they can find somebody close enough to Connor, myself, and Miles, then they should be doing well. They should do pretty well.
Those three guys you just mentioned, it seemed like that was the core You guys are the leaders. Who can step up leadership wise next year? Think Taplin can get it done?
I think he's capable of doing so. And being that he's the only senior, I believe that he knows what he's up for. And being also, it'll be his third year playing, so he knows what is expected of him, and I think he'll do a great job.
Now, you are a senior getting close to graduation, only a month away, I've been hearing. What are your feelings only 30 days away to that day when you walk on the stage?
Right now, I'm sure it'll be different from when it actually happens, but I'm excited. It's been a long time, been in school for a while, and I just didn't see this day coming at all. But for the most part, I enjoy it.
What are you going to miss leaving behind?
Just the school experience of getting up, doing homework, all of that. Not necessarily sure if I'll miss it, but...
The routine?
Yeah, the routine.
Now, we've asked everyone this question who's come on. How did you get recruited to play at Dominion? Because you were a very good athlete, and I feel like a very good recruit coming onto the campus. How did you sign here and actually become an athlete for the Penguins?
Well, assistant coach, Coach Mendoza, knows my former coach over at Cypress College, one of the JCs I played at. And they are good friends, and they got in contact with me. And that's how the recruiting process started.
Where's Cypress at?
Cypress is located down south, Southern California.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So if it wasn't for Mendoza, you think he wouldn't have been a DU?
Not at all.
Oh, yeah, because no one really knows about this school. Yeah. I feel like it's hard.
SoCal to NorCal, I was like, that's a huge jump.
Yeah.
That was a big get.
So are you a Laker or a Clipper fan?
Lakers.
Okay.
Oh. Die hard.
There you go. I was hoping you wouldn't say Clippers because the Clippers against the Warriors. I was hoping you'd say a Laker fan, but all right. I just wanted to get that out there.
I hear you. Well, I think that's it. I'm covered.
You're covered. I've got everything that you want to know from Devin Golson.
Well, we were talking pre-interview. I mean, he's got to get going. You got anything you want to shoot him?
I just wanted to. Well, good luck in your recovery.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know that you can do it, and you're going to have success playing overseas.
Appreciate it.
Just make sure you take your time because it's nothing you want to rush back from. So I know from myself and Alex, we want to say that. And it was a pleasure watching you on the court this year.
Appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, very versatile player. So best of luck to you. Thanks for coming on. And we'll be back at the Temple of Swan at radio.dominican.edu. playing a little air guitar there.
Yeah.
Yeah. The way you ended that interview.
Oh, man.
Was prime time. Prime time.
I was trying to think of one more I could get to him, but.
It happens.
I really didn't know.
Yeah.
I was kind of just. That was a lot. That was kind of just quick and brief and.
Got to the information you wanted to hear.
Yeah.
This
he was
the,
pretty
yeah,
quick this, with the answers, too.
This is the Temple Swat at radio.dominican.edu. Just finished up an interview with Devin Golson, the senior forward who played a bulk of the season but missed the last two games in conference tournament due to an ACL, MCL injury, required surgery. And we got into a little bit in the interview about his thoughts for the team next year because he won't be here. What are your feelings towards the team coming in here next year? Because they did have such a good season. They're looking to build on that and maybe make the NC2A tournament next year. What are your feelings towards the next year's team?
I think the three leaders now go to who Devin mentioned, Taplin, Schwartz, Edmiston, Hayes. That's the core three. Orner is their big guy. We'll see. They got a transfer in. He's got to have to step up. I'm not sure if he's going to be inserted into the starting role or what. They need a big.
Yeah, they need a big like Haysbert. Someone who's just a big body who can get rebounds and score on the offense side. Because Haysbert was a very good offensive player, which is kind of undervalued.
Yeah.
We didn't really notice it as much, but he was a very good threat on the offensive side. They need a guy just like Haysbert to take that place, maybe even better. If they get a player better than Haysbert, this team can go deep.
Oh, my. Yeah, oh, wow. That's asking a lot. If they can do that, that'd be a huge hole to fill. And then they're not going to have much bench depth. So he said the two Joshes are going to have to step up. They will. They're going to have to grow up even more. And they did towards the end of the season. They got to keep getting better, work on their game on the offseason. And those guys can be quality players coming off the bench.
Yeah, and one thing that we saw from the Penguin team towards the end of the year when Golson went out was their three-point shooting got a lot better. For some reason, yeah. Everyone started knocking down threes, and they started looking for threes. Guys like Bates, Orner, Carrillo, Taplin, they were all starting to shoot more threes and make more threes because of it. So I think if they start doing that and doing that pick-and-pop game that Orner likes to run a lot, and they get that big guy like you're talking about, this team could do the same thing they did this last year. They could repeat that success and maybe make that next step towards the tournament because expectations are going to be bigger now because of the 22-8 season they had this year.
That's huge. You can't just have one great season and then have a season down, a very down year. You need to, if you're not going to build on it, you got to get close. And you got to get back to the conference tournament. I think that's the emphasis for next season.
Yeah, because anything can happen in the conference tournament. So if you get there, anything can happen. You got to win three games in a row, and then you can move on. So that's got to be the goal for them. And like you said, you can't have a down year after such a positive year for them. And switching over, let's just get into a little bit. We did have Roldan and Castro on air last week. What are your feelings for the women's basketball team as they had a kind of an up and down roller coaster year last year and they just fired their coach in the offseason?
I think when you have to fire your coach, it takes a rebuilding year or two to get her system into place.
Get the players.
Get them bought in. You have to get your players to buy in. And they lost their leading scorer in Quaywon Owen, so that you're going to have to find someone to replace her. And Cox was huge.
Leading rebounder in Cox.
And there's not much growth, I'd say, in this team. It's pretty young. And so it's going to be a tough season. I'm going to just put it out there for the Lady Penguins. It's going to be kind of a tough go
next year.
Like
you said, anytime you bring in a new coach, it's going to take 2 to 3 years to build that system. She's going to come in here. I mean, it's too late for recruiting probably, so she's not going to have too many of her players coming over with her. So you're going to live with – she's not going to live. I don't want to say it like that. You're going to have to play with people that she didn't necessarily recruit in. So she's not tied to these players at all. She doesn't know what they do or if they can run through her system. So like you said, it's going to take an off season to build the recruits, get some freshmen in here, and start building up through that. I mean, they still got some decent amount of pieces that they could still win some games. They got Holbrook, who's a very good three-point shooter. They have Yamauchi, Nelson,
and Hyatt.
So they've got some pieces to where it could work. But like you said, I mean, expectations are definitely different from the men's and women's basketball team.
And there's one way that this program can start the turnaround next year, and it might not be conference tournament again, but the turnaround will happen is once this coach establishes consistency. All players know their roles each and every game. There's not going to be fluctuation of the bench and new units getting rotated rapidly. Find units that work well together, and that's who's then players can kind of expect, okay, I'm going to be checking in with this girl usually, or I'm gonna get her on a sub. Like you see that in all sports. Like you sometimes they have a six man or there's a player that okay, I know I'm gonna be getting him or her. Like that's just how the rotation works. There was none of that with Coach Chambers. It was all rapidly.
And it's like we didn't know who was coming off the bench first. In baseball, it's important to establish roles in the bullpen. You want to have your sixth inning guy, your seventh inning set up, your eighth inning set up. Yeah. Then you want to have your closer. It's very important to establish roles, and I think that's one thing that we didn't see from Coach Chambers and was probably played a part in why she was let go by the athletic program here. It's going to be important for them to get that set unit and maybe get those 2 to 3 people off the bench that know when they're coming in and know what their role is. Either they're scorers, defenders, people who will press or rebound, certain roles that each bench player will have to make this team better. So that's definitely something to build on.
And challenge some of the girls to be a leader. New coaches will come in and say, I need this from you. If we're going to grow as a team, I need this from you. I need you to be a leader on and off
that's,
the floor.
Yeah, exactly. That's a very good point. And sometimes when a new coach comes in, you'll see people or players that maybe you didn't think of the year before as being great really step into a new role and be huge players for the team. So we could look at that as being one of the positives. Maybe someone off the bench that maybe got 2 to 3 minutes a game, like a Danielle Hare or something, comes up and plays huge because of the new coach and she fits into the system. And a lot is said for when a coach has trust in you as a player and it gives you that extra boost on the court. So I think anything could happen. That's a very good point that you bring up.
Yeah, that's the beauty of it.
And going towards our pick section of the week, we're going to do a little Grande combo pick selection this week.
Man,
I was on that Taco Bell.
Taco Bell.
I was
too,
on a Taco
man.
Bell moment. But we're going to do some NBA playoff picks and NHL playoff picks.
Ooh.
We're going to do both and how many games you think is going to happen.
Try
to predict the future here. Do you want to start with NHL or NBA? What are you feeling?
Oh, that's tough.
I just put you on the
spot.
We
got the NBA up right now. Let's go NBA.
Okay, let's go NBA. So we're going to start in the East with the 1-8 matchup in the Hawks versus Pacers. What is your take?
I'm going to take the Pacers in 5. Just flat out saying it.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Pacers in 5 as well. You read my mind. I think the Hawks can manage one game maybe at home, but the Pacers are definitely the better team. The Hawks squeaked in a weaker conference. I think the Pacers take it.
Yeah, I think the 7th and 8th seed for the East will get a game. Maybe 2. Brings us to the next series. Bobcats taking on the Heat. Bobcats were 7. They had 7 wins 2 seasons ago, and now they're in the playoffs. How about Michael Jordan being a huge piece of that? Yeah.
Michael Jordan.
Michael Jordan finally getting a taste with an executive position in the playoffs, but he's got to go against LeBron.
Yeah, for this game, one stat that I read recently was that the Heat are 15-0 against the Bobcats since 2010-2011. I mean, odds are definitely in their favor.
Bobcats are due for a win.
Yeah, that's
not the series
that's
win.
That's the way I'm thinking. I think the Bobcats take 2 games here, but the Heat win overall in 6 because I think Al Jefferson will win 2 games by himself. He's a definite threat, and he has no one who can guard him on the Heat. There's no one who's going to be able to match up with Al Jefferson, so I think he takes over. Bobcats, don't get me wrong, are not going to win this series, but I think they take 2 wins, Miami in 6. How about you?
I'll take Miami in 5 another time just because I think Wade is going to get a rest period here. In the first round, I think the Heat are going to try to find ways to rest Wade as much as they can until the Eastern Conference Finals, barring that they get there. I'm assuming they do, but I'll take them in 5.
And in possibly one of the better series for the Eastern Conference, we have the Brooklyn Nets taking on Drake's Toronto Raptors. Toronto Raptors. I made myself laugh there because I said Drake and I said Toronto Raptors.
Oh,
but I meant to say
dude,
Toronto.
That's a great pun.
Toronto
he's
Raptors.
From, he's
I didn't
from
even,
Toronto.
I didn't
Toronto
even mean
Raptors.
To do that. Oh, that was funny. That made me laugh.
Started from the bottom. Now we okay. We're done with Drake.
Yeah. Okay. So the Nets versus the Raptors. Who do you got in this one?
I'm gonna say Nets in 6, but the Raptors are dangerous. Oh, that. Yeah, I'm gonna take.
You're having some
I'm gonna take the
reservations.
Nets in 6. The Nets in 6 only because this is the only reason why, is they have the experience and they know that the role players around know that they got Pierce, they got KG, they got players that they want to win for, and so they're gonna be battle tested throughout. But I think if they lose to the Raptors, huge fail.
Yeah.
For their season, I think the pressure will be on. I'm going to take the Nets in 6. It could definitely go 7.
Yeah, the Nets paid a lot of money to get the team that they have right now. A lot of veterans on their squad with Garnett, with Pierce. This is a toss-up. I think that's why it's the best series in the Eastern Conference. I can go either way, but I'm going to take the Raptors in seven at home. I think that's the main deciding factor for me. The Nets are getting a little bit older. They have an old squad with guys who are veterans, like you said, who they want to definitely win for because this could be their last go-around. And I think the Raptors tire them out through a seven-game series and win at home in game seven.
They're killer at home. That's a great pick. And Kyle Lowry has been phenomenal this season. And this is what I love to see of certain teams. They trade arguably their best player. Arguably. It probably isn't because I'm going to say Lowry is. Maybe DeRozan's their best scorer. But they traded Rudy Gay to the Kings. And there's a lot of fuss about that. Because, oh, you're breaking up our big three. Raptors have gone on a tear since they've gotten rid of Rudy Gay. Yeah. That team
and
is
no
good. One,
exactly. No one's criticizing that move anymore.
Not at all. And so I like that team.
And it's made,
that's a good pick.
Like you said, it's made room for Kyle Lowry to be the star that he is right now on the Raptors. So that series could go either way. Then going into our last series of the Eastern Conference, it's the Washington Wizards and John Wall against the bruising Chicago Bulls.
I think this is the last team the Bulls wanted to see because I'm going to take the Bulls in seven. But
ooh, Bulls in seven.
The defense, I'm always going to take the defense and the hustle of the Bulls. They find ways to win. But this is the run and gun. This Wizards team, I hate comparing NBA to college, but this is like a VCU. They don't press, obviously. Oh, my. You hit me with the Bulls seam, the Jordan intro. Yeah, Wizards don't stand a chance. dude, they can get up and run. They shoot the three really well. This is going to be a tough defensive matchup for the Bulls, but they always find a way.
Yeah,
I got Bulls.
I think the Bulls in the playoffs are definitely a different team. They can bruise you. They'll wear you down over seven games if they need to. Joakim Noah is an absolute savage inside.
He's a savage, and he's a leader.
Exactly.
He's a great leader.
He's going to will this team to a victory, to four victories, matter of fact. I think they get it done in six. Bulls and six. Did you do a game allotment?
I went seven.
Okay, so seven. I say Bulls and six, but had to play that Michael Jordan intro.
Oh, let's keep it going.
Okay. It's only a minute long, I think, so I'm going to have to have it on loop.
It's play on time. It's playoff time.
It's play. All right, you give us the first matchup of the Western Conference.
We got San Antonio Spurs hosting the Dallas Mavericks, and I can't remember where there hasn't been a good series between the Mavericks and Spurs, and it usually ends with Mark Cuban throwing a fit in the stands.
Yeah, and that's what's going to happen in this series. I think the Spurs are really the top of their game right now. They are the cream of the crop, creme de la creme.
Creme de la creme.
And I think they get it done in six, even though the Mavericks do pose a threat with Nowitzki and Ellis and the scoring tandem they have there, but I think the Spurs get it done in six.
I think that the Spurs are a well-oiled machine. This team doesn't play their best game because they're always playing on point. It's just like you don't see all the Spurs played one heck of a game this tonight. They are always playing that. I got Spurs in five. I think
Spurs
they run Dallas
five.
Out quickly.
And the next match at the 2-7 is the Grizzlies versus the OKC Thunder with Russell Westbrook. This playoff series, like you touched on last year, they didn't have him when they suffered the defeat against the Grizzlies. Who you got in the 2-7 matchup?
I think Thunder are ticked off. Thunder get him in five as well.
I think the Thunder are definitely going to win this series, but I'm saying it goes seven and they're going to have to win on their home court. I think the Grizzlies have been playing hot of late. They've gotten Gasol back from injury. I think it's definitely going to be a good matchup against two teams that don't like each other very much.
That's true.
OKC in seven.
If OKC runs that to seven, that's the worst possible thing that they could do with the Warriors and Clippers matchup in waiting, especially if that series doesn't go too long. But if they both go seven, it's all good. Next, we're getting in to the Dubs and the Clippers. We already gave you our prediction, but did it change?
Yes, it changed. Clippers in seven instead of six.
Oh, boy.
But no, I think the Warriors can definitely beat them, but I just don't feel as confident without Bogut as I would have if they had him. This is going to be a good series either way. I'm going to say Clippers in seven. Lock it in because it's my pick time. How about you? You're sticking with the dub pick?
I'm going to stick with the Dubs. I'm picking here with my heart, not my gut, because I can't stand the Clips. I only love Doc Rivers. But the educational pick, yeah, probably you go Clippers here. But I'm going to go Dubs in six somehow. They catch fire again in the playoffs. Shock the world.
And win
Dub
it
Nation.
At Oracle.
Win it at Oracle. Chris Paul goes home in the first round again.
And then that was dramatic. We should have just ended on that. And the last pick is the series that we also have to watch out for, the Trailblazers versus the Rockets. I forgot my pick in this one, but I think I remember hopefully. Said. No, I remember what team. I don't remember how long I said, though.
I don't think that this series is short of seven games. I can't see this at all going five, six. It's going to go seven. I think the Rockets right now, slightly better. Slightly better.
And that's why you're
going... Portland's a better home court team, but I think, I don't know. I take Harden and Dwight right now over Lillard and Aldridge.
Portland doesn't have the home court advantage, and I think that's why the Rockets win in seven as well.
Good call.
Rockets seven, and lock them in, because that is our 2014 NBA playoff slate. Now jumping over to NHL, which has already kicked off, so kind of we can get a little head start, a little advantage, if you want to call it.
A teaser.
So if you want to start, we'll do it the first round in, I don't know if it's called, is it the East? Because I know they changed the divisions. I think it's still the
you
East
know
and
West. Than I, do,
I think it's still the East and West.
Okay.
But then it's like the
Metropolitan?
Metropolitan okay. Is like one of the divisions. Okay. So it's really weird. But we'll start with the Bruins versus Detroit.
This is the one of the worst matchups if you're Boston. You hate to see the Red Wings in the playoffs. This team creates havoc. However, I don't think they do. I got Boston. Why? Because they have the coolest song they play when the goals are scored. The crowd goes ham. I wish I could tell you who their leading goal scorer was. I can't. I'm going Bruins in seven.
I'm going Bruins in four. Detroit is not that...
You would have been seven. You would have been a sweep.
Detroit is definitely a very good program. They're prestigious. They're always in the playoffs year after year. But this year, they do not seem the same. They're getting a little bit older. They don't check as hard as they used to. I'm thinking the Bruins get it done in four with Krejci. As their leading scorer, I believe, if I want to go on the record and say that. I could be wrong, so don't hold it for a lick, but that's one of the guys I know. So.
I trust you.
In the next series, it is the Lightning versus the Canadiens, and this one's already kicked off, so if you want to get a little head start, Canadiens are up 1-0.
I was surprised, man.
The Habs.
I would have taken the Lightning. They really started kicking off the season well, and I think they're going to come back here and take the series in six. Who do you think?
Yeah, I think the Lightning are a very good team, and I was surprised by that Habs win. And I think it's going to go seven, and I like your pick of the Lightning. I think they come back all the way to win the series 4-3 over the Canadiens.
Next series, we got the Pittsburgh Penguins versus the Columbus Blue Jackets. And the Blue Jackets got a young, inspired team. Had the Penguins up 3-1 yesterday. And they got Malkin back, the Penguins do. They limped into the playoffs. Marc-Andre Fleury has got nightmares in the playoffs as a goaltender.
Yeah, he's not good in the playoffs.
So they came back and they won it 4-3. Who are you taking? Because this is the one seed here.
They're going to have to score goals to win this series. Like you said, Fleury is not good in the playoffs at all. That's why I'm scared. But I'm going to take the Penguins in six because we are Penguins here at Dominican. So I'm going fellow Antarctic animals.
I think Penguins got fortune in their first game. I don't know if they're going to be able to go on the road and take care of the Blue Jackets, but I'm going to take the Penguins in seven. I think that they will lose in the following series, though.
Oh, you're already making next round predictions. And then the last of the Eastern Conference is the Rangers versus the Flyers, which did kick off, I think, at 4 today, so that game could be over. I didn't get an actual stat on that, but let's leave it at we don't know what the score is. So
yeah, not at 1.
Yeah.
Let's keep it at that until we make our pick.
Okay,
fair enough. Sir. Fair. I'm going to take the Rangers. Home ice.
Yeah,
that's the only reason why.
Yeah, the Flyers are always a tough matchup in the playoffs because they're very physical and they can make anything happen. I know that we were watching the game early on. They only had 3 shots to the Rangers 14, but they are already tied 1-1. Just with only 3 shots. I think they can definitely make it interesting. I'm going to take the Rangers in 7. Because I like all these hockey series going deep. Most of the matchups usually do. Because it's such a physical and anything could happen. All of the games are one goal differences. So it's just about who's hot on that certain day.
Next series, Colorado Avalanche versus the Minnesota Wild. Who are you taking?
With Waugh as the coach, nothing will go wrong.
Waugh.
For the... I know, I used to say it was Roy because it's spelled Roy, but it's pronounced Waugh. Waugh.
Quick name for you. What about... Farman Farman.
Farman Farman.
Farman Farman.
He's butchered his name.
Sorry.
Yeah, I remember that guy.
All right. Anyways, yeah. Nothing can go wrong.
I think nothing goes raw. Wah. Yeah. And I think the Avalanche win in 5.
Oh, I was going to take Avalanche as well. I'll take them in 5 as well.
the next matchup is St. Louis Blues versus the, I don't like them, but the Blackhawks
from
Chicago. I think
besides the Sharks-Kings series, this is the second best intriguing series to me, personally. I'm going to take the Blackhawks, defending Stanley Cup champs. Blues can bounce them in the first round. It's going to go 7.
Yeah, I think it goes 7, and I think the Blues win it.
Oh!
It's going to be a good matchup. But the Blackhawks have proven themselves in the playoffs. The Blues haven't. They usually always seem to get bounced in the first two rounds. But I think something's different about the Blues team this year, and I think they get it done in 7.
Goodbye, defending champs in the opening round. In this game, one of my buddies was at last night, and I texted him as I saw they went up big 4-0.
Yeah, and then let it creep back a little bit.
The Stars got back into it. I think Anaheim really starts to shut the door. I'm going to take the Ducks in 5.
Yeah, winners of the Pacific Division. I think the Ducks also take this against the Stars. They let their foot off the gas pedal in the first game. I don't think that's going to happen anymore than Ducks win in 5 as well.
Sharks, Kings, enough said. Sharks looking for the revenge. Quick, a lot better than Niemi and Net. Does that come back to haunt the Sharks? Who do you have, Mr. Temple, for $1 million?
The Sharks? Oh, I don't want to bet $1 million on it. Sharks in 7, no one's going to agree with it as if you listen to ESPN or the writers on SB Nation, but the Sharks in 7, Niemi's going to have to play out of his mind to hang with Quick, but the Sharks are going to get more shots on goal than the Kings, and I think they're getting more opportunities. And look for Joe Pavelski to score the game winner in Game 7. Captain Joe gets it done.
Nailed it. Sharks in 7 as well. I don't see how this series doesn't go 7 games. If it's comes down to goaltending, advantage Kings. Like you said, if the Sharks can get a lot of shots up on Quick, Sharks can win it. Rafa Torres coming back as well. That's going to be big for him. Listening to the Temple of Swan on radio.dominican.edu. Good night.